the intro.
Welcome again to the Trinity Tims. We're live again. So the usual format, I'm joined by Eric Knott from Reed Celtic and James Forrest from Celtic, the Celtic blog. I'm Joe McHugh from Video Celts. We're past hump day on international break, or international boredom, as most of us know it. So it's the final international break of the season. We got some hilarity from the SFA. After winning 1-0 away to Greece, they managed to cave in and lose 3-0 at home. So it gives Scotland a bit of a horror group for the World Cup. And that will be driving us to distraction in September, October, November. 6 matches over 3 breaks. No Celtic during that period. And that will be Scotland's World Cup interest tied up. It would be a brave man or a fool that would be betting on Scotland making any progress. And that would make it 7 successive World Cup finals without Scotland and the Tartan Army being present. But that's life when you've got, when you're led by Ian Maxwell, when you've got Alan Mulroney of Alloa as your president. And a little update from today, Scotland under-21s have been enjoying a jolly over in Spain.
Yep.
They beat Ireland, first of all, 2-0. And then this afternoon, they took on Iceland. Iceland has got a population of 400,000. Just under 400,000. I suspect half that population is female. When you break down the age range, they don't have too many players to select for their under-21 side. But Iceland's under-21s were involved in a 6-goal thriller against Scotland today. Iceland won 6-0. I think Scott Gemmell is the under-21 manager.
6-1.
They haven't reached a single tournament, not qualified for anything. I think Ben Doak is about the only player to have come through the system, and that was Scotland losing 6-0 today to Iceland. So on that note, I'll move on swiftly. So we'll have a little look back retrospectively at the miseries of the Glasgow Derby. I've seen quite a bit of strange reflections in this. Apparently Celtic had a very good second half, according to some people. We're all over them, etc. I don't think there's anything to cling on to from that match. We got it back to 2-2, but we were always looking vulnerable. Virtually no one in the side came through with any pass marks. So it's strange to see anyone trying to make anything from it. I'm going to say a day forgotten, but it can't be forgotten because after hammering them 3-0 at the start of the season, we've had 3 very poor, dodgy, indifferent performances against them. We managed to get through in the League Cup final, but the last 2 league games have been well short of expectations. The game at Ibrox, there's possibly excuses and circumstances for it. None whatsoever for the game at Celtic Park, Celtic's last match. So, Eric, I'll pass over to you first of all. Reflections 10 days on from that miserable Glasgow derby. Is there any straws to cling to? What have you taken on it from the final whistle being blown on March the 16th?
I don't think really there's much to cling to. Like, there was, obviously. I mean, we didn't really have any choice but to go at them in the second half. But I suppose the only thing that I could say is that I felt that the lack of the substitutions bench really. We didn't have, obviously, as you pointed out in the last podcast, Joe, we had, you know, five non-starters, guys, 5 players on the bench who hadn't made an SPFL start in the whole season. So, and the fact that we didn't have a game-changing substitute to come on. You know, we didn't have somebody who could make an impact and turn the game on its head or whatever you'd need in that kind of a situation. We just didn't have it. And the fact that he made so little substitutions really kind of showed that he had no faith in what he had on the bench. So if there was any straw to clutch at, that's kind of the straw that we just didn't have a bench to choose from. If you know, recollect the game back in 2018 at Ibrox when we were, when we were 2-2 in that game, and he had Odson and Edward to choose from to bring on from the bench, and it was a master stroke in that regard, and he brought him on and we won the game 3-2 and saw it out pretty well. We just didn't seem to have that kind of impact or ability to have an impact with regard, you know, with regard to the way things went in that second half. And I said in the last podcast, I always had a kind of a bad feeling that something, they were going to get something, they were going to get a break, they were going to catch us on the break, because they had been doing that quite a lot throughout the game. I mean, one of the main things that I've kind of noticed from it is there's an awful lot of gloating from the Irish fans about Nico Raskin and the comparison of Nico Raskin in comparison to Arnie Ingles. And like I said in the last podcast, I touched on the point that the Ibrox fans were very quick to point out Ingles' value in comparison to most of their starting lineup didn't make or even add up to the value of Ingles. Which, granted, if you're in a position to be able to gloat about things like that, that's something you could gloat about. But they'd be just as quick to turn around and say that, you know, like they are today, that Nico Raskin is now suddenly worth 30 million quid, you know? So, and that's kind of what always happens at Ibrox. You have one great game in a derby, and all of a sudden you're a superstar. You go on and you make your international debut. You're a superstar, and now you're worth 30 million quid. And that's the thing. I put out an article today where I said that I would happily, you know, be, what would you say? Anybody could challenge me on this, but I would say that Arnie Ingles, when we do eventually let him go, will sell for a hell of a lot more than Nico Raskin sells for. We'll get a huge fee for Arnie Ingles, because you can see in his performances the kind of player that Arnie Ingles is. Now, he didn't have a great game that day, but then again, nobody else did, other than, as we discussed, Mike Naraki. So, you know, he didn't have a great game that day, but he's had a lot of great games this whole season. And the big fundamental difference between him and Nico Raskin is he's in with a shot for 3 trophies and 3 medals at the end of the season. Nico Raskin's in with a shot for none. And I don't believe, you know, that they're going to get any further than the quarterfinals, because with Athletic Bilbao being their opponents in that game, I don't see them actually coming out of that one. The ex-Barca coach, guy who won 2 titles with Barcelona, he's going to be a serious tactician. I don't think Barry Ferguson is going to have the measure of him. So while they might give them a game at Ibrox on the 10th, the return leg, I can see them being turned over pretty heavily by Athletic Bilbao, you know. You know, the only what straws can I clutch at? The only straw I can really clutch at is that we didn't have a bench to choose from. We didn't have a game-changing substitution to choose from or to bring on to make a difference. And that's about the only thing. The rest of it is we just weren't good enough. And we have to take our medicine in that regard. Biggest concern, will Rodgers learn when we go to Ibrox? He'd be a fool not to change things up when we go to Ibrox and to try and approach the game in the same way. As James said, it's the definition of insanity. You know, if you're going to try and do that again, you're just going to get pasted again, and they could score another 3 goals against us again. So Brendan Rodgers, at the end of the day, isn't a fool. So I sincerely doubt he's going to rock up to Ibrox and try and approach the game the same way. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Okay, so we had a report a couple of days ago from the fairly reliable Derek McGregor in The Sun that Callum McGregor will be back for the Harps match. So that's a start. It'd be nice to have Paolo Bernardo, Austin Trusty, and James Forrest, the other James Forrest, available. We'll see. We'll get pictures from training on Friday morning, and then we'll find out the team Saturday. So, James, have you clutched at any straws since last Sunday's miseries?
As I said at the time, mate, if it wasn't for Rodgers' comments prior to the game, I would have been less confident than I was. But Rodgers talked the talk and then didn't walk the walk. I was very disappointed with the fact that we went out and tried exactly the same thing and got pretty much the result we deserved. I did think the second half was a lot better than the first half. I thought that on balance in the second half, probably deserved to get something out of the game. We created enough chances, even at 2 each, to win the game. Although that would have been a fortunate result, I think, as much as anything else. But as I said at the time, I kind of get myself terribly animated about it, to be honest. Because it's just another 3 points. I'm not altogether worried about the team that inflicted the defeat on us. I'm worried more about the fact that the same team has done this to us four times in the last five games. That has scored three goals and we still don't have an effective counter. If it was Aberdeen, I'd be just as worried. Hearts, I'd be just as worried. So the manager's got some lessons to learn and hopefully he does learn them. I wonder if maybe this has been an eye-opener in terms of the work we need to do in the summer. Now, I'm wanting to sort of give the club the benefit of the doubt in terms of the bench, because we had four key players who were only available for the game. And if they're available, then the bench looks a lot better and the manager's options are a lot better. But I just wonder if there's going to be some kind of rejigged policy in the summer. Maeda playing through the middle may answer the striker question. I genuinely don't believe there's going to be someone better out there who we're going to be able to sign, who scores as many goals. We will probably need another wide player if Maeda's going to play through the middle. But, you know, that seems to be already on the club's radar. But I think we need a ball-winning midfielder. I think we need a midfield iron man. But then I've been singing that song for I don't know how many years now. A lot. Too many. And it wasn't a priority for Ange, and it doesn't look like it's a priority for Rodgers. But Rodgers has to know that the current balance of the team isn't quite there yet. I'm not saying it's totally wrong, but it's not quite there yet. There are games that are going to be battles, and we're not really equipped for that at the moment. And I think the manager's going to have to look at that and change it. That aside, I think they're getting awfully excited across the city about a game in which they had a 2-0 lead and were in total control. And we seized the initiative back in the second half, got it back to 2-2 and probably could have won it. So I really don't know what they're getting excited about. I really don't get the Barry Ferguson buzz. But I'm glad for it, because if they appoint him, I think that may be the biggest strategic mistake they've made in a long, long time. And the way the media is banging on, it looks as if he's got plenty of cheerleaders in the mainstream press. So that's good for us. That works for us. In terms of Nico Rask, and I'll go you one better, Eric, right, than just that whatever we get for Engels in the end will be more than they get for Raskin. I think the profit margin, although we are starting from a much higher baseline, having paid $11 million for the player, I think the profit margin will be higher as well. Because this is a player that was playing in the Bundesliga. We signed this kid for the Bundesliga.
51 games in the Bundesliga.
Raskin's never played at that level and he never will.
And the other point that I made as well was that, you know, Raskin made his debut for Belgium at 24. I mean, to be fair to Engels, he has four caps already and made his debut at 20. So, you know, when it comes to his international career, he started a lot earlier than Raskin has. So, and I'm sure there's a lot bigger things to come from him in that regard as well. So yeah,
yep.
I would make the point as well that, you know, Raskin, for all his, what would you say, achievements this season, if you want to call them achievements, he's still going to come out of the season empty-handed. Ernie Engels is going to be a treble winner, most, you know, all going well on his debut season. So to say that Raskin is a better midfielder than him, on the basis that Raskin played a better game in the derby game at Celtic Park so last Sunday week, that's just the Ibrox sport, you know, as you said, getting overexcited.
He's one of the guys that runs about a lot.
It's what they do.
There is advantages that he runs about and he works hard. I don't really see there being a great technical player there. I think he's very careless with the ball. I think he's very prone to a mistimed tackle, if you like. He gets away with that in Scotland more than he'll get away with in Europe. I don't see that there's that much there. He's just one of the guys that runs about all day. And the SPFL's full of the players. This isn't the first time, of course, that they've got overexcited about Raskin and started bumming up with some kind of superstar. I think Van Bronckhorst had the spell where he got a tune out of him. But it never seems to last. He's not that great a player. There's not that much there.
No, it was Beale brought him in.
They need a hero right now, and they're awfully excited about this particular player. So they can have
every couple of months. You need someone along those lines. There's always someone. Cantwell got all this treatment, and various others. Generally get it as soon as they arrive. Another belter I've seen recently is a few guys stating the case that Butland's better than Schmeichel. He might have lost less goals in the Glasgow derby, but virtually every English goalkeeper is in the England every regular goalkeeper is in the England international squad, but there's no place for Super Jack. But that's the mentality. They beat us. It was sore. It was painful. I don't want to go anywhere near it again, but it is a bit of fun when you see some of the nonsense come up. A small correction, James. They've scored 3 goals against us 4 times in the last 7 games. It's not the last 5. So they scored 3 in the 3 each game at Ibrox. That was followed by a 2-1 win for us at Celtic Park. The Scottish Cup final, a 3-0 win for us. So we had 3 games where we seemed to have it back against them again. And then the last 3 games we'd all rather forget. But they have to be remembered by Celtic. And I'm sure Brendan Rodgers will not be going to Ibrox with a similar mindset and a tactical ploy.
He cannot possibly.
That's possibly, we'd like to push that event into the distant past, package it off and leave it there. But it will come back up when we go to Ibrox. But on Sunday, we were treated to a real treat. Buried amongst Hugh Keevan's column, where he was going on about all the problems that Celtic are facing, he gave us a little nugget that he was woken up one Sunday morning by a phone call. It wasn't just an ordinary phone call, it was a phone call from Peter Lowell. So the man that is never, the former Celtic CEO, the current chairman, that has never got round to reading the 5-way agreement, the most important piece of legislation in Scottish football, which gives our closest rivals a different rule book, certain advantages. Peter Lowell reads Sunday Mail. So I don't know if he goes out to the news agent or finds a news agent that sells it and buys it, or whether he puts it on his phone. But it was a strange little insight. I suspect that Peter Lowell didn't want that conversation to see the light of day, but see the light of day it did. So, Eric, what was your take on that bizarre series of events where the ever-sensitive Celtic chairman gets upset by something written by a Daily Record, written in the Daily Record, sourced from the Radio Clyde phone-in, where some random caller was upset about Peter Lowell's influence at Celtic? How did you receive that? What was your take on that, Eric?
Well, obviously, like James, on Sunday, I did an article on it. So I was reading the article, the Keevan's article, and I was, you know, kind of saying, this is one article where I can't disagree with a lot of what he's saying, based on the fact that, like, realistically, he was just repeating an awful lot of what every Celtic fan had said in terms of the way Celtic played and in terms of Celtic's performance. But when I got to that section, I just went to myself, cha-ching, there's my article for today anyway, you know? So to expect people to believe that Peter Lowell has no influence over transfer moves by the club or transfer deals by the club is totally absurd to expect any of us to believe that. And if Keevan's believed it, then more fool him, and he's exactly the fool that we take him to be. But and I think, to be fair, in echoing what James said, it's all about perception. And it's all about the perception that Peter Lowell has created. And what I said in my article is there has been a pattern there for 20 years plus of the way that we operate on the transfer market, and that has not changed. It has not changed. It did change briefly. There was an interregnum, as you'd say, when Ange Postecoglou first came into the club and Don McKay was in situ as the CEO at the time. That was a very, very brief change. Didn't last very long. As soon as Peter Lowell was back in the building in January of 2023, and his son was also in the building as the head of recruitment, everything, as you were, returned to the same. So while Peter Lowell expects us to believe that he has no influence over transfer dealings, Silent Mike is his protege, you know? So at the end of the day, his protege is going to do exactly what he's advised to do, because as you've pointed out many a time, Joe, he's a sports lawyer. He's not a scout. He's not involved, or he has never been involved properly in player recruitment. So he's going to take his lead from Peter Lawwell. And while the final call might not be Peter Lawwell's, the final call will be advised by Peter Lawwell, and then Michael Nicholson will make the decision. But as far as I'm concerned, Silent Mike is just his protege, and he's his puppet. He's on a string. He's going to do exactly what he's told, because he doesn't know any different. He's never known any different, because he's always been in a Celtic Park where Peter Lawwell has been ever present. And he's seen the way that the club operates when Peter Lawwell has been in charge. And when he has to make a decision, I'm pretty sure he picks up the phone to Peter Lawwell. So for Peter Lawwell to pick up the phone to Hugh Keevans and vehemently stress to him that he has nothing to do with transfer dealings is to take the entire Celtic support for fools and expect them to believe that. Because if Michael Nicholson was going to do anything different as a CEO, we'd have seen it by now. And he has done absolutely nothing different in terms of the way that the club operates. So, or in terms of the way it operates when it comes to transfers anyway. And you have to say, the last window, and I said in that article on Sunday, the last transfer window was one of the worst that I have seen in Celtic in recent history because of how it weakened the team. And I also pointed out that we discussed on this very podcast that eventually that would catch up on us, and it caught up on us on the 15th of March or the 16th of March when we played the Ibrox side, and we did not have a bench to bring, you know, to bring a player off who could actually change that game. And that was because we said directly after the transfer window closed, if we got a bad run of injuries, we were going to be severely weakened. And we saw the evidence of that. And look, unless there's a radical change, and as James said earlier on there, unless there's a radical change in the way that we operate and our transfers come this summertime, which I don't hold out much hope or faith for, I think it'll just be more of the same. It'll be lastminute.com. We'll be in the last week of the transfer window before anything actually happens. I mean, realistically, I don't see them getting the business done early in the summer, despite the fact that they will know clearly, and I'm sure Brendan Rodgers will have clearly listed to them what he needs in terms of recruitment to make a good stab at the Champions League coming up. But yeah, that's my take on it. If Peter Lawwell thinks that he has, you know, that we believe he has nothing to do with player transfer dealings, he's taking us all for cretins and fools. I got attacked by a few people on my blog, you know, who are board sympathizers. To be quite honest, it was hilarious. It was very, very funny, the things that they were coming out with and what that man has done for the club, and we should be down on our knees and so on and so forth. I just laugh at it. That's all I can do. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yep. A bit of the old housekeeping. We are very, 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 very close to the magical 1,000 subscribers. So we're getting a good range of comments coming in tonight. That's people joining us live. The podcast will be on each of our websites and YouTube. So please spread the word, let other people know about it, and we'll get through that 1,000 barrier probably by some point on Monday while we're recording this live. So we should get through that significant mark. Just to go through a little bit of a timeline before we interrupt James. I don't know if James is checking out news of the Union Bears getting banned from Ibrox. Or whether they've banned
No. I've got.
What you on?
James? I'm just refreshing my memory on something, which I'm going to talk about in a minute.
Well, before I bring you in for Lowell, just a timeline on Peter Lowell. October 2003 became the Celtic chief executive. End of June 2021, he stepped down. Ha ha ha. Let's see, it was July 2022, Matt Lowell came in from nowhere. The content manager of the Manchester City website was appointed our head of recruitment. And then 6 months later, Daddy was back in the chair, January 2023. So Peter Lowell was away from Celtic officially for a total of 18 months. During that time, his son was appointed as head of scouting by Michael Nicholson. And surprise, surprise, Michael Nicholson was one of the many people appointed by Peter Lowe. But rest assured, Daily Record readers, Sunday Mail readers, Peter Lowe has absolutely nothing to do with Celtic recruitment. His vast years of experience, his contacts, all that sort of stuff, he does not bring that in. He leaves it at home. He leaves it on the heated driveway before he reports to work. And all that experience has got nothing to do with it. He just sits quietly in a committee, nods things through, represents Celtic at the Talking Shop, which is the European Clubs Association, and takes a complete backseat. Very little to do with it. So that's the timeline. So he was away for a total of 18 months, during which time his son was appointed as head of recruitment. You were quite vocal on it, James, in your post on Sunday. Refresh us, let us know your take on it and the nonsense that Peter Lowe is at Celtic with absolutely no influence in anything. He takes a back seat, apart from getting upset at the AGM and phoning Hugh Keevans on a Sunday morning to have him jumping worried out of bed. Over to you, James.
As a lifelong Celtic supporter, it is a great privilege to be asked to take up the position of chairman, having already been part of our club for nearly 18 years. These are exciting times for the club, and I look forward to contributing to the well-being and success of the club. Our objective, as ever, will be to grow and further develop the club across all areas. I will be offering my support and guidance to the board and executive management team to ensure we continue to drive the club forward and protect and promote the interests of our supporters. So said the man when he was appointed. Michael Nicholson said, "We're delighted to welcome Peter as chairman, and I look forward to working with him, as we continue to progress and develop the club. Peter has a wealth of experience in the football industry at a domestic, European and global level, which is invaluable to the club going forward. Our collective objective is to create a world-class football club our supporters can be proud of, competing at the highest level with a strategy based on growth and continuous improvement."
Brought
options fairly straightforward to me. Peter was brought in to continue the work that had already been done. He was brought in to offer guidance and support to the board of directors. And his experience and all those other attributes he has were touted as being invaluable to his taking on the role. As I said in the piece on Sunday, if you want to convince people that you do not hold any influence or power, you would find it easier if you were not in a position of influence and power. If you want to convince people that you are not still an influential figure at Celtic and Scottish football, it may be better if your minions were not calling bloggers to tell them to take down articles, and you personally did not think it was appropriate to call journalists to correct the record. Because maybe I'm crazy, but that's what people who are in positions of power and authority and who have power and authority act like. If he holds no authority and does nothing, then there are a million people we could have chosen for that job. We didn't have all those attributes, because if all you do is count the pence and open the meetings, you could get a cardboard cutout, appear and stand it in the corner, and the guy from the mailroom could do that job. So it's nonsensical. It's always been nonsensical. The idea that the guy who was chief executive for all those years holds no authority at the club at all, wields no power, is flatly contradicted by his own statement when he was appointed chairman and by the statements of the outgoing chairman and the CEO. It's asking us to accept an awful lot. It really is. It's asking us to accept an awful lot.
But that is the contempt in which Celtic supporters are held. We're fools who give him our money and his board.
It's a great find there, James. That's the Celtic don't say very much, and that statement when he was appointed as chairman sums things up. They probably thought that all sounded good at the time, but you've dug it up, you've thrown it back out there, and it doesn't look very well. It makes Hugh Keevans look like an old fool for accepting that nonsense that that he published on Sunday, but that's for the Daily Record readers and Sunday Mail readers. But it's very strange behaviour. I'm just remembered when Eric was speaking, he made a few references to Michael Nicholson. Last week, Michael Nicholson, after the Glasgow Derby, he was off to New York, whipping it up in New York. There was a Celtic charity do, and Michael Nicholson was having the time of his life by all reports. So that's how he treats the club. It was a nice jolly for him. They did raise £400,000 or $400,000. Very commendable. But we did have, after our podcast last Monday morning, we did have a Celtic statement, which was typical of Celtic statements. I think it was four lines long. There was nothing whatsoever specific about it. James, are you looking for follow-up from that Celtic statement? I know, again, an issue we discussed last week a little bit was about the Green Brigade and the kettling. Oh, again, one of your articles last week, you slightly altered your opinion based on the facts that you found out about it. And we do have, on Saturday, we do have there's going to be a protest outside London Road Police Station. It's been backed by a number of Celtic supporter organisations. So, James, possibly reflecting a little bit and with a bit more knowledge on it, what's your take on the events outside the Celtic Supporters Association last Sunday and your thoughts on a protest outside London Road Police Station this Saturday?
Well, that was a situation to be avoided if at all possible. But we do not live in a perfect world, and fans don't seem to believe they have any other recourse since the club has not done very much to stand up for them. I know that John Paul Taylor was on the scene of whatever it was that happened, and he is not happy about the way that Police Scotland conducted themselves. And he did his best to liaise between the fans and the police, but to no avail. Their initial statement, which I obviously believed more than I should have, hailed the whole operation as a great success. But then Ibrox fans get into the ground and release fire, which should never have happened had the operation been the great success that they said it was. Then Seascape broke and they do nothing about that. They don't intervene in any way to prevent that or to arrest people for having done it. It looks two-tier. It looks as if there's one rule for us and one rule for them. I know that the Union Brats had a wee dig at them as well. Said that their fans were treated the same way, but they were inside the ground. Enough of them got inside the ground to render that ridiculous. They're complaining just for the sake of complaining, if you ask me. The more I found out about it, the less you can support it. The problem with these guys is that they find it dead easy to kettle women and kids, but they don't want to actually wade into a crowd and arrest actual lawbreakers. And that's been ever my problem with Police Scotland. If you look at how they handled the George Square riot, that was one of the most scandalous examples of hands-off policing I've ever seen. And I can't even imagine what this country would look like if we had similar problems to they had in England at this tail end of last year with the asylum centres getting firebombed and stuff. Police Scotland would just stand back and let that happen and hope that they could make arrests later on. It's ludicrous. It's one of their entire policing operation is one of the worst I've ever seen. They should have got piled into the crowd in George Square during the Ibrox fans title celebration, title riot, more like, long before they did. And it was only when elements of the crowd turned on them because they were all pissed up and spoiling for a fight that they actually did anything about that. They're unbelievable. They're absolutely unbelievable. They don't have any credibility with a lot of people. Nobody's got any faith in them. And that's just this.
And all that was
the
during,
fact it's going to be a protest.
That was during lockdown.
Yeah. And I know exactly. Even the gathering itself is a criminal offence. Even the gathering itself. But did they disperse the crowd when it was still at the point where they could have done it quite easily, quite comfortably? No, they did not. And then they allowed people to get drunk, which is also a criminal offence. They allowed sectarian and racist singing, which is also a criminal offence. They allowed fans to beat the shit out of each other, also a criminal offence. damage to property, also a criminal offence. And then finally, when the crowd decided they were going to have a square go with him, then it was truncheons out and riot shields up. It's pathetic, absolutely pathetic. It was a horrendous, horrendous day for Police Scotland's reputation, and a lot of heads should have rolled because of it, and none of them ever did. Scottish Government hands them far too much power and allows them to police in a very unorthodox fashion. I don't get it at all.
For the events in May after the final game of the season, Police Scotland escorted fans marching towards George Square. But when Celtic drew at Dundee United and they officially won the league, that was fairly spontaneous. But the final game of the season, I think the Union Bears had requested a cortio or a march or whatever to George Square. That was rejected, that was refused. But when they went ahead with it anyway, they were escorted into George Square. So nothing adds up. So it'd be nice to have some leadership from Celtic, but we don't get leadership from Celtic in any matter. So it's highly unlikely that there's going to be any comment from them on the events outside the Celtic Supporters Association. And then we'll see how things go on Saturday. I'm sure it'll be absolutely peaceful. It's a very convenient location. It's a convenient time. Hopefully there's more than just the Green Brigade and boys along there. I suspect there will be. And I think the statements might have halted. I don't think anyone wants to keep drawing attention to this matter. So, Eric, have you got any thoughts on that one? Following up from the... here's over to you, James.
The other element of this that surprised me is that their club is somehow involved in discussions about the coming title party. What that has to do with them, I do not know. I don't know why they're involved in that discussion. I really don't know what their role in it is. Because certainly nobody is speaking seriously about the prospect of them winning the league. Nobody's speaking seriously about that. So why are they involved in the talks? Do they have a veto over this or something? They turn around and say, we would rather it didn't happen. We would just go, okay then. Well, why not? Celtic shouldn't be participating in any discussion in which they have a part. No, in terms of this anyway. So I just find that astonishing. I really don't know what their role is.
I don't want to defend anyone here, but I suspect that they might be covering their base in the highly unlikely event of the Europa League finding its way to Ibrox this season. So we know how...
Them having a title party is more likely than that, Joker.
Well, we know how the media and everyone likes to lump both clubs together at every opportunity. So while Celtic are 95%, 98%, 99% certain of winning the league, and they are 2-5% certain to win the Europa League, that's a decent opportunity to lump the both clubs together, and they've got a contingency plan just in case. But I'll pass over to Eric for his thoughts on the policing events. You're viewing this from afar, Eric. I'm sure there's policing issues, Gardaí issues in your part of the world. What's your take on the way things have tumbled out over here following the kettling of the Green Brigade and others outside the London Road Celtic Social Club?
Yeah, I mean, look, as you said, I'm kind of seeing it from afar, but it, like, on the day when we discussed it after the game, I know James was kind of, you were a bit more pro what the police had done because you weren't aware of the entire circumstances surrounding it at the time. And I said twice, you know, the Ibrox fans got flares into the stadium, so something wasn't right. But from my perspective as a fan in Ireland and watching the events that unfolded even back in May of 2021 and the riots that went on there, what actually baffles me is the level of inaction when it comes to Ibrox supporters and what they're allowed to get away with. And I suppose the overriding sort of question that I have in my head all the time is, why are they so afraid of them? Why are they so afraid of dealing with them? Why are they so afraid to intervene when they should be intervening? And Joe, pretty much you're hitting the nail on the head there. But, I mean, one thing that stands out to me from May of 21 was the mealy-mouthed what would you say, statement from what you call your first minister, Nicola Sturgeon, which was, you know, spouting massive condemnation of their behavior. But yet, as first minister, isn't she the person who is in overall charge of the country and should be therefore in charge of the police force? And she said nothing, absolutely nothing about the light-handed action of the police force and what they, you know, the fact that they just stood back and let it happen. And they let every law that James alluded to when he was talking there be broken during COVID at that time. So if we go back to what happened at the Celtic game, you know, against the Ibrox side, you know, the week before last, that to me, it was a targeted operation. It was a targeted operation against Celtic supporters. It didn't really matter to them who they kettled, clearly, from the evidence that's coming out from it. And also the fact that, you know, people aren't going to just protest about something unless they have good reason to.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Celtic supporters, we're not in the business of protesting very often. Nope. And so, to my mind, there's a reason this is happening, and that there's a very good reason it's happening. And I believe that there's, you know, a lot of people were upset by what happened with that whole operation, especially from, by all accounts, you know, women and children who were stopped and didn't get into the game. And I think that's very unfair. Stopping somebody who just set out on a day to go to a football match because you're just deciding that you're targeting Celtic fans more so than you're targeting Ibrox fans, because clearly they got their 2,400 allocation into the stadium and they got flares into the stadium. And once again, they broke the law. They sang the songs that they shouldn't sing. We now know what the situation is regarding flares and fireworks at games. They broke the law there. Where's the action? Where's the punishment? Where's the sanctions from the SFA? What's going to happen at Ibrox in the next game? What are we going to see? You know, 2,000 Celtic fans are going to be allowed into Ibrox, and you couldn't pay me enough money, I wouldn't go there. I just wouldn't go there. You know, and my heart goes out to the guys who are going there because they're brave souls. All 2,000 of them, because they are going to put up with dogs abuse from the Ibrox fans, but there's a distinct chance they will put up with dogs abuse from the police as well. And it's not a good look for the game. If you're somebody who's from outside the country and you're looking at what's going on, okay, I'm a Celtic supporter, so I'm invested in it. But if you're a neutral who's looking at what goes on in Scotland, it's just not a good image for the game. And it goes back to what we said, you know, last week. The Celtic board wanted this. They wanted all of this pizzazz, you know, showmanship, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what you call it. I just call it a shit show.
Yeah,
it's a shit show. And that's what they wanted back at Celtic Park. And they got it with fucking bells on. 100%. They got it with bells on. And I read an article there today. Was it yourself, James, who said that the Ibrox fans cannot win fair? Like, they have to, they win, you know, even when they win dirty. I'm not sure, was it you that said it? So they can't even celebrate in style.
No.
You know, and there's no humility about the way they celebrate and the way they celebrated at that game. And that also, you know, we haven't talked about the Journey incident and how that could have incited a riot, and how he still hasn't faced any sanctions or punishment from the SFA. And it was you, Joe, that wrote the article this morning, which I commended you on, about the fact that, was it an Ayr United player too? Was it Ayr United?
Ayr United goalkeeper in a match in October 2021 threw a toilet roll back into the Kilmarnock fans and ended up with a 2-match suspension. So there is a precedent there, but we're now 9-10 days on from the match, not a peep from the SFA, not a peep from the Police Scotland. So it could be that they're both waiting in each other to take action and then just hope everyone forgets about it.
Yeah, but like it by inaction, it just means that, like, I know in hindsight, Charlie probably, you know, surely if the man has a brain in his head, he knows what he did was stupid. But at the end of the day, like, if nothing is done, then people will just believe they can behave like that.
Yeah.
If you don't set an example,
we're almost 10 days for the game, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, if a Celtic player did that at Ibrox, we scored a late winner on Celtic player did that at Ibrox, wouldn't it be no 10 days between the incident and action getting taken by the SFA? They'd have come down straight away, instantly.
Yeah.
And they can make all the excuses they want about the international break. The whole SFA isn't on holiday right now. They could convene a hearing. UEFA's managed to do it during the international break. So what's that excuse?
Yeah, for me, it's scandalous that nothing has been done about this. And it is, I mean, I did an article last week where Vladimir Smicher came on saying that what Cherny had done would hinder his chances of signing for Rangers on a permanent basis because the Celtic fans are, and I quote, aggressive, and they're going to make his life hell for him if he goes into Glasgow City Centre. When did Vladimir Smicher become an authority on the Celtic fans or even know what the Celtic fans are like to pass that opinion about the Celtic fans, that the Celtic fans would attack Cherny if he went into Glasgow City Centre? I mean, seriously, pull the other one. The garbage that they come up with and the people that they go to for that garbage, and as I've been pointing out lately, all they're going to is gambling websites to get their exclusives in the record. So it's absurd. If for example a Celtic fan hopped onto the pitch and sprayed an Ibrox player, what would happen then? It's the same thing. You know, he's not above the law. No. So why should he be above the law? So I don't know.
It's worse than all that a journalist are trying to play this dude as a nothing incident is, oh, you know, get a sense of humour.
Saying he should be nice.
We still going to get told to get a sense of humour. No, we're going to get told that Celtic fans are behaved like thugs and, oh, this is a dreadful thing for the game and all that. There's no sense of responsibility either way this guy or with the media that's covering it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is why the governing body thinks they can just ignore this and hope that it goes away, because the press now, they would rather it went away. It's a joke. Yeah. As I say, no Celtic player would ever have got away with that. Would be
if Cherny's such a fun guy, why didn't he spray whatever the contents of the water bottle were on his fellow substitutes, his manager and Neil McCann and Billy Dodds, Alan McGregor? Such a fun guy. We'd all have laughed and slapped our sides about it. But here's a phrase we don't hear very often. Thank goodness for UEFA. So, Will the SFA, the SPFL, and everyone else is sitting doing... Eric's got dog duties to deal with. So, while the Scottish authorities are sitting doing next to nothing... Welcome back, Eric.
The sun has set on me here, so I had to throw a bit of light on the subject.
I took the precaution of putting a light on here in East Kilbride. I suspected it might have been dark by the time we're finishing. But UEFA have stepped in today and taken action. So in the almost 13-year history, not a thing has been done about the poisonous singing, the hatred, the racism that is all part of the Ibrox matchday experience. SFA, SPFL won't touch it. No member club will complain about it. But unfortunately, over at UEFA, they don't like that sort of stuff. So UEFA stepped in today. We'd all have liked a stand closure, or even better, a stadium closure. But we got a reasonable result out of it today. So for the next 2 years, the Union Bears will need to behave themselves in the Copeland Road stand. And it's not the full hammering that we'd have liked. But clearly, in talks with UEFA and the club at Ibrox, it's been mentioned certain songs, and those certain songs, there's one in particular we know all about. UEFA banned it in 2006. It's called the Billy Boys. But today, the club from Ibrox have described it as illicit songs. They're afraid to mention that song, but the Union Bears want to enjoy themselves in future European games. They'll need to cut out all the things that they do, all the things that they enjoy. So it's going to be... I'd rather they were out of the competition, but next in April the 10th against Athletic Bilbao, they'll need to stick to sort of football songs, sing about their hero players, nice one, Cyril, and all that sort of stuff. Or else, there's going to be a closure of the Copeland Road stand for a future European match. So this period is going to last for 2 years. If they break it, there'll be a stand closure, and I suspect UEFA will be keeping on the case for further breaches. So, James, I dare say you welcome today's news from UEFA. What's your take on events?
I wrote a piece about this morning, which I was due to post at 7 o'clock, and I had to madly edit it in the middle of the afternoon when the news broke that they actually got sanctioned. But the thrust of the piece that I had originally written, and the one that went up about half an hour ago, is that they've been off UEFA's radar for a few years, and now they are right back on it. Now the eyes are on them again in a way that they haven't been, as you said, since the Newco climbed out of Rangers' grave. And they will be very sorry about that. In the fullness of time, they will be very sorry about that. I expect at least a stand closure before long. Because that club is beyond any point of return. It's the chance for the Newco to operate on a different basis and be a different cultural institution went by the boards the minute they took on the name Rangers and the identity of that club, because all the baggage that came with that club was part of the deal, and they'll never get rid of it now. It's there, and it's there to stay. And the only question is what it will cost them. And as far as UEFA is concerned, UEFA has remembered why it had its eyes on Ibrox in the first place. I thought they were lucky to get away with two banners that they had last season. The one where they'd done the hooligans one, so I thought they were pretty lucky to get away with, but then it's obvious that nobody at UEFA played them early 2000s video games, because I recognised that straight away when I saw it. And the Gangs of New York style one, which I thought was as racist as this one in its own way. It was an anti-immigrant banner, and again, UEFA completely missed the connotation. I had a half suspicion that UEFA might not quite get the connotation with this one, because it was so abysmally worded and politically incoherent, but the overt racism in it was just a bit too obvious. And there were, it would have been pretty poor had UEFA not at least recognised that the sentiment behind it was a racist sentiment. Their club's response is obviously based on two things. They are concerned, seriously concerned, about UEFA, now that UEFA's BDI is back on them. And they're concerned about how it will look to the Americans. And it's the Americans that I find the funniest, because if you want to talk about woke foreign ideology, you're not going to get more woke foreign ideology than what the Americans will bring to this, if in fact it is the York family who are behind this whole thing, because they're prominent American Catholics from the most liberal city in America's most liberal state. And they do an awful lot for charity, and they do an awful lot for progressive causes. And if the Union Brats and their brethren think that they have a woke club right now, wait a while. Wait a while. Because these people have no reason to tolerate this stuff in the stands. They have no reason to do it, and they'll have no inclination to do it whatsoever. And so the times may be changing across there, and not before time. It was never going to happen because of pressure from Scotland, but pressure from America and American money might just do it. We live in hope. That might be the most fundamental thing that changes at that club.
Yeah, I was telling that they never said a word about the banners, about the missiles, about the overcrowding. After the match, they waited till they got the warning from UEFA when the charges dropped. So, yeah. Eric, you had a nice take on this during the week. You linked it in with the takeover and saying about how they need to sanitise the support. But if you sanitise the support disappears. Their one and only purpose is a rallying point for racism, sectarianism, hatred, poison, xenophobia, anything else. That is their unique selling point. They've mastered that. So trying to get rid of all that baggage to package it up to prospective American owners, you might find there's not much left there. So what's your thoughts on the events of the so-called takeover and the sanctions? Just to confirm the sanctions from UEFA, there's a two-year suspended closure on the Copeland Road stand. There's a €20,000 fine for the banner. I've got a confession to make. Briefly, on Friday evening, I watched GB News, where the banner was discussed by two of their pundits, experts. The funny thing was, they didn't know, they couldn't explain what the banner was about. They were talking about the grammar of it, the mixed message, and that was their take on it. Everyone knows what it was about, and Defend Europe was the giveaway phrase in that mangled banner. Don't know if that's anything to do with the Star Spangled Banner, but the mangled banner of Defend Europe. So it's fun and games.
There was weird looks in the airport on Friday night when you emailed me that, because I actually busted laughing in the middle of the airport security line, and I could not stop laughing. When you were telling me that GB News was going to discuss it, I thought, that's just perfect. That's absolutely perfect. You could not even make that up.
Taking it to a wider audience, and GB News is without doubt the target audience for the same cretins that populate Ibrox. So, Eric,
without a doubt,
what's your take on things as you stitch together the UEFA sanctions and the so-called American fakeover?
It's definitely going to be tough times ahead for the 90-minute bigot. You know, it's going to be a hard one for them to get used to, but. Yeah, there's been an awful lot of scrambling all of a sudden to make them look like they're this welcoming club that they had recently, which created murder amongst their support, is, to my mind, eventually going to lead to a civil war amongst the support there.
Yes.
Especially, you know, the union brats, as James calls them. Or the onion bears, as I like to call them, from their experience in Spain a few years back, but the last Europa League final. They're going to become a very liberal club all of a sudden. This kind of liberal attitude is going to be enforced on them by their new owners, if the new owners do take over. But I'm beginning to wonder, with regards to the takeover, if there's, you know, a few things that have happened in the recent past, in the last couple of games anyway, between the European games and between the game at Celtic Park, that have sort of given some of the guys who were interested in taking the club over cold feet. Because I don't think they're liking what they're seeing. And as James quite rightly pointed out, the York family is a Catholic family. They believe strongly in the Catholic faith. There's a serious hint of irony that a predominantly Catholic family could take over that club. There's something very, very funny about that, you know. It's Comedy Club Sevco again, you know. That could end up, the owners could end up being like that, you know. And then what happens if they decide, they don't want orange jerseys anymore, or they don't want... You know, they don't want the Union Bears in there anymore because they cause the club too much hassle and give them a bad image. I mean, all these things could be stamped out. You just don't know. It's like what James said, you know, when they rose from the grave back in 2012, they brought every element from the old club, but multiplied it by 10 because they had a chip on their shoulder. And they hated the world because the world had destroyed their old, you know, they hated the whole of Scottish football because Scottish football had destroyed their club. And they were out for revenge. And there was many statements made to that effect as well by the board, you know, that people were going to, you know, there was going to be scores settled and all the rest of it. So for me, they're definitely in the in UEFA's eye now again. And true to form, they probably won't let us down in the game against Athletic Bilbao. Something will happen which will cause them to get into trouble again with UEFA. And if they do, UEFA are probably going to come down twice as hard on them, and you probably could have that stand closure coming about, which again, it's not a good image for them, and it's certainly not a good image for the prospective owners if something like that happens. And the thing is, if you're the guys who are going to invest millions upon millions in this club, then you're the guys who say what goes. Because if you're putting plowing your money into the club, and if you say you're not going to stand for this crap, then the club's just going to have to toe the line. But I'd say the board members who are there at the moment, who, you know, just want to be paid off and get the fuck out of Dodge, will run for the hills when the time comes and leave the Americans deal with it. And I just begin to wonder, will the Americans suddenly discover they've bitten off more than they can chew, you know, in terms of what they inherit. So I think it's very interesting times ahead. Like I said before, I welcome this takeover if it does happen, because if anything, I would hope that it would spring our board into life and actually get them to, you know, if they want to keep them at a distance, then they're going to have to spend money, because if the other guys invest money, although I don't see how it's possible considering the amount of money it's going to cost to actually just get the club on an even keel, the amount of money they're going to have to plow into it just to pay off the directors and then start making the club profitable. And you're talking years here. And that's what they don't seem to get. You're talking, I've written plenty of articles on it where I've said, it took us 30 years to get to where we are now, from when Fergus McCann took over the club in 1994, which is 31 years ago. You know, it took us that long to get here and to get to the level of stability that we have now. So, like, if they think this is an overnight thing where suddenly, like, these guys are just going to plow money into a black hole and that all of a sudden they'll have a big transfer kitty where they can spend 50 million on players and all the rest of it, dream on. Like, they haven't, as we've pointed out plenty of times, they haven't done it with Leeds. You know, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it straight away when they get in the door there if they haven't done it at Leeds. And the other thing that I pointed out about Leeds, if they get back into the Premier League, which is under threat slightly at the moment now, or the guarantee of it is under threat at the moment, they're getting into the richest league in the world, which has massive revenue streams when it comes to TV money. They don't have that at Ibrox. They have a ceiling in terms of what they can hit when they sell all their season tickets and when they sell all their merchandise. Everybody knows what their ceiling is. How the Americans think that they can get more money, it's like they can get more money out of that. And as I said before, the only way that they can get more money out of that is add another 10,000 seats to Ibrox. But the place will probably fucking fall down if they try to do that because of what happened when they tried to put 600 seats in there last year. You know?
See, this is where the difficulty is going to be, right? And I know there are a lot of you watching this, right? And I'm sorry, Paul Walker, for example.
Look at that now.
This is what we're talking about here, you bigoted fucking cretin. This is what we're talking about. Your poisonous, racist, bigoted attitudes. Backward 16th century wankery. This is what holds your club back. And if the Americans are going to come in and make any kind of money, and grow the brand, you know what that means? It means you and the rest of you being booted the fuck out. Because that's the only way to grow the brand. That's the only way
to increase
the customer base. The only way. So if these guys are serious and they want to grow the brand in America and beyond the west of Scotland and that little bit at the top of Ireland, that little corner of Ulster, which will forever be fucking true blue, they have to get rid of you guys. You all have to go. Your club has to completely transform in every way, culturally, economically, psychologically, all of it. The only way that these guys make their money back is by expanding the club's window and by expanding its appeal. And they'll never do that as long as you people are around. So we're no longer your biggest problem. We're no longer the big threat.
Well, Paul Walker's banned anyway.
The guys who are going to give you more headaches than we ever have, because they need rid of you.
Yeah. Or to put it, James, once they get rid of the Paul Walkers and the rest of them, that so-called small minority, there's virtually nothing left there. For Paul Walker and this, and many of the Bears that looked in last week, on Saturday at Dundee, you're fine to sing about your hatred of Catholics, your hatred of Irish, your hatred of various things, that's fine. Fire away. No problem with the SFA or the SBFL. You've got Hibs the following weekend. Again, sing all your poison. But when it comes to Athletic Bilbao, you'll just need to button it. You'll need to sit in your hands. You can't sing about Catholics. You can't sing about Irish. Just that's the rules. So you're at Aberdeen in between the two Bilbao games. Again, and up at Aberdeen, fire away. Fill the airwaves, Sky Sports, let them know all the things that you hate. But then when you head over to Spain, you'll need to keep quiet again, or else your club will be in big trouble. So that's going to be fun and games for Paul Walker and the rest of them. We'll leave that lot for now. I dare say we'll come back to them in future matches. Yeah, so hopefully against Bilbao, they give it full... The anti-woke crusade, the Union Bears get tore in and put their club in real trouble at home to Bilbao. But over to you, Eric, for the final word on the angry Bears.
Yeah, all that I'm going to say is, you know, to synopsize what James said, you guys are going to get pulled kicking and screaming into the 21st century finally when these guys take over.
Absolutely.
And it's about time. It's about time. You know, time to leave 1690, guys. Time to leave it. And come into the 21st century and live with the rest of us. And they're going to struggle with that big time. Anyway,
there is no takeover going on. Andrew Kavanagh is in talks with Dave King. The other guys have no interest in it. So it's fantasy stuff to think that there's an American takeover on the way. But I'll leave it that one part. As I said, we dare say we'll come back to it. So. We've got football
Joe, I wrote something about this today. Do you think the most likely scenario here, as I do, is that these guys will take a minority stake? They'll accept a couple of seats from the boardroom table, maybe, and that the record and the other outlets are going to have to spin that as a big victory and as a transformational change when, in fact, it isn't anything of the sort. Because, I mean, we said right from the start,
Andrew Kavanagh,
do you see a clear path to majority ownership here? And I still don't know that there is one. But I think the longer this goes on, the more likely it is that they'll take a minority position, the same as they did at Leeds at first. And they'll try and work it for there, if they do at all.
Right. I think Andrew Kavanagh has found the same spirit in Dave King. Dave King's desperate to sell his shares. And Andrew Kavanagh looks like a tire kicker. He's been over. He's done a few jollies. He's been in the director's box, a wee bit of glory, a wee bit of fame. But I don't think there's possibly a little bit of interest from the 49ers Enterprises if Andrew Kavanagh can provide 51%. But I suspect he's on his own. There's been hee-haw from Douglas Park. Nothing at all from the other four shareholders that are needed to get the 51%. So Keith Jackson and Chris Jack can rattle on about it forever and a day, but I suspect there's not much happening. And anyone doing due diligence will have stepped up their due diligence after today's news from UEFA. So dream on. They can keep this tail bubbling along through season ticket renewals, and then they'll find that there's some small problem and it doesn't happen. But that's enough of that lot. So, as I said, we're back in action on Saturday. We might be without Kasper Schmeichel for the first time this season in the SPFL. So, we don't know the extent of it. I saw one report this morning saying he could be out to September. I think that's a shot in the dark. But there's a possibility that he could be missing against Hearts on Saturday. He could be out for a couple of weeks, but we won't know until Friday. We'll get an indicator on Friday when we see training pictures from training, and Brendan Rodgers will have a media conference on Friday afternoon. So that'd be a bit of a blow. But as I said earlier, our captain, Callum McGregor, should be back in action. There could be a couple of others. What are you looking for on Saturday from Celtic when Hearts roll into town, Eric?
A statement win, because I think that's what we need. Brendan Rodgers needs to regain some fan confidence after the performance that we had against the Ibrox side on the 16th. So I think we need a statement when we need them to go out there and just go for the juggler. There needs to be no hesitation. We need 3-4-0, 5-0. Biljami Sinisalo is going to get us. He's going to get an opportunity to show us what he's capable of because of the injury to Schmeichel. Do we have any indication of a time frame on that now at the moment?
Nope.
No, nothing as yet.
Wishful thinking, guesswork, shots in the dark.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, if Kalmak is back, he'll control midfield. He'll do the job that he needs to do and he'll rally the troops. He was a sore loss for the game on the 16th, so we definitely need to have him back and have him, well, it just depends on what his recovery is from the injury that he had and whether he'll be able to do a full 90 minutes, but at least he has to start, I think. And the guys just need to go out there and do the job. They need to go out there and hammer hard and show that this is a blip. It's not something that's endemic and something that's going to follow us until we get to Ibrox. So we need to actually just show what we're really about. And if I recall, it was not quite this time last season. We had a game against Hearts and we steamrolled them. And it was kind of where we got into our groove and closed out the season. If you remember, Matt O'Reilly played a peach of a pass over the defence onto Kyogo's foot. And he scored a beauty of a goal in that game. And that was kind of, that game was what really drove us on then to wrap up the title in 2024. So I think, you know, Brendan Rodgers needs to maybe talk to the guys about what happened that time a year ago. And they need to come out and do the same kind of thing and show that, you know, this is a really solid, good Celtic squad that can go out there and do the business. And they just need to get momentum going and build up that momentum so that when we go to Ibrox, that we get the statement win that we need to get there too and put that whole myth to bed that, you know, they're somehow now our bogey team, which I'm sure Rodgers will be absolutely chomping at the bit to prove wrong. So, yeah, statement win, 4-5-0. Go out there and do it.
James, beat Hearts earlier in the season, 2-0 at Celtic Park. That was in the back of an international break. It was a bit of a stodgy performance. Arne Engels scored his first goal from the penalty spot. There was nothing each at half-time. So we've got Hearts again on Saturday after another international break. I think there's going to be a lot of expectations in Celtic. What are your expectations for the game on Saturday?
I suspect that a lot of people at Celtic are hurting and have been hurting since last Saturday. I suspect that there is going to be a real willingness among the management team and among the players to right that wrong as soon as possible. Because the only way you get rid of the hangover is just to go out and completely dominate the next game. And I think that's what we'll do. I think that's what the general mood going into the game will be. And I think that we will put it behind us. We're a comfortable win. At least I hope so.
there's no reason not to. We beat, was it 4-0 at Tynecastle? I think that was November. I remember there was hellish storms that day and there was some doubts about the game going ahead. But we turned Hearts over quite comfortably. I think that was one of Critchley's first games. Hearts are pushing for top six, which probably wasn't their ambition at the start of the season. So hopefully we can get back in the groove. But there's always issues coming back for international break. But there should be more motivation than ever after the previous SPFL match. So we'll wrap it up for this week. That's us pushing 1 hour and 14 minutes of your time. Thanks a lot for everyone for looking in. Lots of good comments. One set of bad comments. We won't be hearing from him again.
There was two other trolls I caught as well, guys.
Yeah, there were a couple.
Yeah.
All right. You must be paying more attention to the comments than me. But we're creating a little bit of momentum. There's a lot of good positive feedback from this. There's lots of podcasts out there from Celtic supporters. But us three have got fairly well-developed blogs you can read from us every day of the week. And we gather together once a week to share our collective thoughts. And now and then we've got a few disagreements, but most of our thoughts are along similar lines, but there's a little bit of variety there. So please, please, please like, share, comment, thumbs up, all that sort of stuff. That all helps. Hopefully we might be over the 1,000 subscribers mark now that this show's coming to an end. So
almost there.
So I'll leave it at that. We'll be back again. The game's on Saturday, so I suspect that we'll be back next Sunday evening, half past six-ish. Yep, I think we've got nods on that. So Hearts on Saturday, and then we'll be on Sunday, 6 o'clock, 6:30, for another lively discussion. The sort of things you don't hear in Super Scoreboard and elsewhere. So I'll leave it at that. And thanks for looking in, and we'll do it all again this time next week.
Okay, guys. Talk to you next week. Have a good one.